what it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Very exciting to have you with me. We are recording this Tuesday, 28th of January, just before lunch. I'm not sure what I'm going to have for lunch yet, but when I do, I'll let you know. Couple of housekeeping issues first and foremost. Subscribe to the show, rate and review, be it on Apple Podcasts, which is where most people listen to the show, or Spotify. Rate and review. Leave a written review if you feel the inclination. I will read it out aloud on here. I'm still waiting for another, I've read in the past, but I'm still waiting for another negative review of the show to read out and have a laugh if you're going to have a go at me. At the very least, make it funny. Other news, I've got another podcast coming out later this week, an interview with John Casey from Channel 7, Fox Sports, Adelaide, and long-time NBL commentator. We spoke last Friday, so most of his conversation was about going into this round's games, last round's games, and really enjoyed chatting to him. Half of it's about NBL 20, and then the other half is about commentary and the hub and courtside and what's involved in that process. The other thing I've got is a six-hour-long interview I did with Ken Cole. Ken and I did this probably about 6 months ago, maybe more in the past, and I'm still working out a way how to cut that down, so that'll probably be released. I'll release that in sort of 45 minutes to an hour-long installments. We talked about Ken's life from day dot to today, talking about everything from basketball, the NBL, NBA, both past and present, his life, everything. And music, politics, we spoke about everything. So just a long, free-flowing conversation that went for 6 hours from start to finish, no breaks. Ken's an incredible character to speak to, and it's not the best audio quality, but when it comes out, you can have a listen to it and enjoy it. The other thing I wanted to make mention of is a guy on on Twitter, and has his own website, who's a really good one to follow, at Tony Lodi. That's TonyLoedi, does a really good dissection and visual representation, clipping from games, the defensive strategies of teams and players out there. I think he's got, say, 100 or so followers on Twitter. That number should be 1,000 or more. Really good breakdown of stuff. And if you enjoy Liam Santamaria on NBL Overtime, taking you through a few plays, Tony is a must-follow. He's also got a website that you should go to as well. If I sound a little strange, it's because I bit my tongue last night at dinner quite badly, and so I got to keep it at the bottom of my mouth. So if I sound a little strange or a little lispy, you know why. Let's have a look at the news. Big news, obviously, breaking. This is not so much NBL-related, but basketball-related. Kobe Bryant has sadly passed away, along with his 13-year-old daughter and 7 others in a helicopter crash in Los Angeles. Really sad, especially for the young daughter who was only 13. I never met them. I never met Kobe Bryant. I saw him play once or twice while in Los Angeles. If I'm being brutal, I wasn't a huge fan. I haven't read his book, The Mamba Mentality, or seen his Academy Award-winning film. He was no doubt a really great player and fun to watch. I didn't cheer for him. I routinely cheered against him. And the reason why, I suppose, is because his dominance of the sport meant more to him than the sport itself, I think. That was the impression I got from him, and certainly from his last ever game he played, in which he shot 22 of 50, and it was very Kobe-centric, which was both good and bad, but it was what it was. But what I did appreciate with him is he had a very interesting way of playing and interacting with the game. You know, he was more Hollywood than Magic Johnson, if you can believe. And so he was always entertaining, richly entertaining. His feuding with Shaq, he was very much of the 90s and 2000s. And a very, very interesting case study in modern athletes. The Lakers next play tomorrow at 2 p.m. against the Clippers. That's Australian Eastern Standard Time and date. I believe that game is now going to be postponed or maybe even suspended. I think the last game was suspended was after the Boston Marathon explosion or bombing. That game never got played. But the other time that a game was postponed, we have to go all the way back to 1963 and the John F. Kennedy assassination. Strangely enough, they suspended that game, but not for JFK, but not for MLK, Martin Luther King, who was assassinated in 1968 interesting. Let's jump onto the NBL now. That's what we all came for. Hawks ownership. This is being reported by the Illawarra Mercury, and in particular Mitch Jennings, I believe, is the author or reporter. Simon Stratford hit with a show clause notice by the NBL, essentially saying pony up the dough for a bunch of things. If you want to get their full report on it, go to Mitch and the Illawarra, the Mercury, I believe it is. That's the best place to go. Interesting set of circumstances going on there. Looks like the team is looking for a new buyer, and perhaps the NBL will take ownership of the team. How to make that team viable in the modern NBL? Really interesting, and much better people to speak to. So go and check out them on Twitter, and they'll tell you more. Matt Logue is reporting that Didi Luzada may stay a second season with the Sydney Kings. Apparently, the New Orleans Pelicans are happy with his maturation over here and may stay a second. Ramon Moore is out for the season with the shoulder injury. I doubt he'll be replaced. I spoke about it on Twitter. I'm not quite sure if the NBL rules are you have to play 7 games with the one team to be eligible for the finals, or with any team. If it is that it has to be just 7 games in general, I believe the options were you buy out Jay Crockett, who I believe is playing in Israel, or someone else who I've forgotten. Well, the other option, of course, is Glenn Rice. If you brought him in, they've got 4 or 5 games left. Maybe he'd make the cut. This is a week ago that I threw those names out. I think maybe the time has expired, but even if they had that in the back of their mind, I don't think they're replacing Ramon Moore. And also got a very sweet message from Benny. I won't say his surname for privacy reasons on Facebook. Very complimentary to the show. He said he first listened to the episode with Cam Trugar and has listened since. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much for the kind words, Benny. Anyone reaches out, always make sure to read them and put wind in my sails, Benny. So thanks very much. Let's jump into round 17 of games. Had another nice comment the other day that no hot takes. There are no hot takes here on the NBL Pocket Podcast. I just give you cool gives, like Huggy Bear from Starsky and Hutch. Lay it out for you to play it out, or more accurately, have a think about. Round 17. First game of the round. Brisbane hosted the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, winning this one 108-101 Brisbane. This was a good showing from them. Brisbane shot 54% from the field, had 27 free throw attempts, as opposed to the Phoenix, who only had 13. Points in the paint. Check this out. 64 points in the paint to Brisbane and only 38 to Southeast Melbourne. So almost double. Just shows you what kind of rim protection the Bullets had going on and what kind of rim protection the Phoenix had going on. John Robson had a nice game, especially the first half, 26 points. Dan Trist had a career high, I believe, with 11 points. Had a career high at halftime. Didn't miss a shot from the floor. Grabbed some rebounds. Walker looked quite good in this one. Javondre Walker, the new import, 17 points. Ty Wesley continues to struggle. 10 points, 2 rebounds, 5 fouls. His last 5 games, including this one, 9.2 points per game, 36% from the field, 3.8 rebounds per game. Where does he sit with Southeast Melbourne? They've gone 4-9 since his return, and 4-10 after their loss to Cairns later in the round, since his return, which was December 8th. It really begs the question of not only in basketball but the NBL, tall, quick, athletic, rim-running bigs versus post-up bigs. It's just not where the game is trending, but we saw better from Wesley later in the round, but we'll talk about that further on. Will Magne was player of the game, and I don't think many could deny it. 19 points, 55% from the field, 7 blocks. I'm not sure whether that's been adjusted to 5, not too sure, but 5, 7, it didn't matter. Got fouled 10 times, resulting in 9 of 13 free throws. 2 really clutch ones down the stretch. Patterson had a great game too, but I think Magne was clearly the difference maker. Had a big steal and runaway layup to end this game, and was big in the fourth. Really great game. Brisbane got a good win, no doubt about it, against a good team, but let's not slap them on the back too much just yet. It was a home game, and as much as Southeast Melbourne are good, they are the second worst team in the NBL. So they were supposed to win. Creek must be hurt, wasn't moving right. Mitchell has teased about him being injured in press conferences, and I respect the wishes of the team to remain private about that and not disclose and not make excuses. I get that, but he just doesn't look like he was moving well. Question I had coming out of this game, Will Magne versus the field of NBL bigs, where does he rank? Obviously, he's running hot, and as is this team, Is it a bright spark? Is it a shooting star? Is it consistent? It's been pretty consistent. Let's have a look. I mean, you look at him up against everyone else, right? There's Bogut, Plumlee, Kay, Oliver, Jawai, Hodgson, Long, Lowe, Ashley, Johnson, Pinot, Ogilvy, Boone. Who's in the Magnay conversation? Bogut, Sean Long, Cam Oliver, Miles Plumlee with an asterisk. We haven't seen a lot from him, but boy, his last game would suggest we're in for something. Johnson. And then I put Magnay. Is he the sixth best big stroke center in the NBL? And then you got to look at the way the NBL is. Like, I think you look at your import dollar. You obviously get bang for your buck with the smalls and wings. Robertson, Machado, White, Cotton, Patterson, all these sort of wings. You know, that's a stacked position that you seem to get great return on. The bigs is a little bit more of a difficult conversation. That Europe seems to snap up a lot of the bigs and they become quite expensive. Obviously, Sean Long is a good import big. But what you're trying to do with the center and power forward spot in the NBL, by the look of it, is get your local talent to fill that spot, because you get better return from local talent. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But you look at it this way. Could he be the second or third best local big, depending on what way you want to break it down? He's obviously in the conversation with sort of Daniel Johnson and Nick Kay. I don't think he's as good as both of those, but it is a matter of what you want from your spot, that spot. Me personally, and I think most of the league looking at it, you value three things above all else: rebounding, shot blocking, and finishing hard at the rim. And for that reason, I ask this question to you out there, and get to me on Twitter or just sit and have a think about it. Would you rather have Daniel Johnson or Will Magnay? Magnay gives you rim protection and rebounding and finishing hard at the hole. Not as consistent as Johnson, but he goes through contact. Johnson doesn't so much do that. Which would you prefer? And maybe I'm crazy for asking the question, but I'm asking the question nonetheless. The other question I had, Will Magnay on the Boomers? There are 12 spots. The bigs are Bogut, Baines, Landau, Bolden, Thon McCurr, Nick Kay, Brock Modem. Where does he sit on making that spot as a sort of a development spot? Are all the NBA guys going to want to go and back up? Very interesting question for Magnay and the Boomers. Let's jump onto the second game of the round. Illawarra lost to Sydney, 79-102. That scoreline was really flattering from what I could see. Again, I don't watch Illawarra Hawks games from this point. No offense to them. I just kind of check in with the score or watch. So if you have better insight into this game than me, you're very welcome to have it. Looking at the stats, Hawks shot 40% from the field. Hobson played quite well, 13 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. How impactful they were, I don't know. I didn't watch terribly closely. Casper Ware, his shooting struggled continue. Obviously, that changed later in the round, but let's not spoil the secret. 10 points, 27%, whereas Deshaun Taylor, 17 points, 5 of 5 from the outside. The Hawks are now 5 of 19. The question I have for you out there is, last season in NBL 19, the Cairns Taipans won 6 wins and 22 losses. Can the Hawks get there? Can they tie or win more games than the Taipans last year? Their run home, this is the Hawks, at Cairns, New Zealand at home, at Melbourne, at Sydney. My answer, they do not. They do not win any of those games going forward, even against Melbourne at Melbourne. And that will be their year. They will finish with 5 wins and a bunch of losses. Adelaide and Brisbane. Adelaide 99, Brisbane 108. Wasn't a great showing from Adelaide at home. 36ers, they're a team that needs to go down to get up. And that's game to game, but it's also play to play. Griffin wasn't playing defense, came out at the 4 minute and 45 second mark of the second quarter, I believe, or maybe even the third, I can't recall. But anyway, came out at that mark. Obiche came in and the Sixers went on an 11-point run. Just played with energy, played with defense. Griffin's a good weak side defender, but as far as staying in front of someone, you just can't do it. Brisbane's style is beginning to mirror their best player, namely Lamar Patterson. Patient and poised. They don't blow you out in the first half. They make adjustments at half and they come out and normally do the damage in the third and fourth. But end quarters clutch. You know, Braun, Singler and Patterson seem to always dominate the last 30 seconds to a minute of any quarter. In the fourth quarter, Brisbane went on a handy 4-9 run, 4-9, with Lamar Patterson on the bench. There's not many tips pardon me, there's not many teams where you could take out their best player and they still go on a run to end the quarter. So I really like that. My big question to everyone out there from this game. And Jerry Wright came under a little bit of criticism on Twitter. So I thought I'd answer this question of, is this 36ers conundrum a Jerry Wright problem or a personnel problem? And I ask you out there, does this 36ers team have a player in the top 15 talent-wise in the NBL? Their three best are probably Johnson, Randall, and Griffin in that order. Drimmick's knocking on the door. Do they have a player in the top 15 in the NBL? Because it's really hard to win without one. Every other team has one. Cotton, Machado, you could even say DJ Newbell out there. Casper, you know, every team's got their guy who is arguably in the top 10 and where you place them within it. But I don't think Adelaide have one, a player in the top 15, and here's why. Here's all the players who I think are better than the players on the Sixers. Casper Ware, Jay Sean Tate, Bryce Cotton, Nick Kay, Machado, Cam Oliver, DJ Newbell, Patterson, Trimble, Golding, Hobson, Creek, Robertson, Plumlee with an asterisk, you know, who knows, Bogut, Tirico White. So cut it, Plumlee. That's 13 players I named before. Everyone from Robertson to Casper Ware. That's 13. I'm pretty comfortable saying all of those 13, except maybe Mallow, Trimble, however you want to slice it. But no, I'm pretty confident in Trimble and Golding. That's 13 players. All better, I think, undeniably, than Johnson and Randall. Here's the section that gets a little blurry where you can insert them. Miles Plumlee, asterisk. Bogut, does he have the get up and go to be your star player? Questionable. Tirico White, you know, regular season so-so, finals fantastic. Nathan Sobey? Like, do we put Nathan Sobey ahead of Randall? I probably would. Whether ahead of DJ, I don't know. Sean Long, Mitch McCarron, Brandon Ashley had a great game, but if he had better foul discipline, I don't have any problem putting ahead of having a conversation about putting him ahead of those two. Ty Wesley, Todd Blanchfield, they're probably on the little bit further outside of that conversation. But in a 9-team league, if you don't have a clear-cut top 10 talent, you're in trouble. So my answer to people who are saying, oh, Joey's lost control of this team, or it's a talented team, or it's a high-paid team, I'm not so sure. And Joey's doing a good job, and he's one of the best coaches in our league, and I'm absolutely shocked that there wasn't a greater conversation around who is going to coach our Boomers in Asia. Nonetheless, let's move on to game four of the round, where the Perth Wildcats hosted the New Zealand Breakers, winning this one 80-79. We all saw the end of this game came right down to the wire. A couple of things from this game for me. Taylor Britt and Sawaka Lo Baluk, hope I'm pronouncing that right, they played a combined 11 minutes, 0 points, I think, 0-1 from the field, no major stats. Gleason's got to do better than that. That's 11 minutes. That's, you know, what is that? That's a quarter of the game. You can't give a quarter of the game to those two guys. Bless their hearts, they're just not ready. Also, what was the rationale? I would have done a bit more Steindl, more Cotton at the point, a little bit more Tirico, a bit more Wagstaff. I know they're not traditional guards, but just sort of, you know, work that in a bit more. Bryce Cotton, big scoring quarter, 16 points, finished with 23. I don't have an answer as to why. I think New Zealand did a good job of kind of taking it out of his hands, doing a few different things, playing through others, you know, Plumlee. White really struggled in this game. 28 minutes, 2 points, 1 of 6. Didn't look to be moving well at all. Are we sure he's not injured? Is my question. Mitch Norton as well. 28 minutes, 1 point, 4 assists, 5 turnovers. And I think it was the turnover that set up the play with Jordan Natai. I think so. Not too sure, though. For me, and this is a harsh criticism of Norton, I think I've been a fan and I like him as a backup. He's hardworking, but I don't think he plays with the imagination or fantasy to be a big-time starter. And you saw both of them come at each other. Jared Weeks and Norton, two very similar players. Jared Weeks plays with that speed, that little bit more confidence, that little bit of whatever, that little bit of shine, imagination. I know I'm speaking in terms that are very poetic, but do you know what I mean? You know, Jared Weeks just has that little bit more of a, I'm rubbing my fingers together like I've got money in between them. You know what I mean? Plumlee, holy shit, 33 minutes, 23 points, 73% from the field, 17 rebounds, 2 blocks. Could have been one more. Amazing. Just looks so big and strong, and a package of size, strength, and athleticism I don't think we've ever seen in the NBL. Just casting my mind back. No, I'm not so sure. Except maybe Bogut when he first got here. New Zealand Breakers, 5 players scoring in double digits. Ashley, 21 points, 11 rebounds. They look better when he was on the floor as opposed to Rob Lowe, who could stretch Plumlee a little bit, but Ashley was amazing. New Zealand only had 34 points in the paint. Perth had 50. Not quite double, but a lot more. Luckily, they shot crazy from the outside, 12 of 31, almost 40% from the field, from the three-point arc for the Breakers. Let's talk about it. That last play, horrible play from both teams to concede the ball on these plays, but Jordan Nartai was not put in a position to succeed. There was a lot of talk about whether he should have been in or out of the game for Abercrombie, and I think you just roll with Abercrombie. He only played 2 minutes and 32 seconds in this game, had donuts across the board. If an alien came down from outer space and asked me what does scared, fear, and panic look like, I'd show him that last possession of the Breakers. That ball came to him and he wanted no part of it. I think the advice from everyone to him would be, throw it on the rim. Don't be shy. Didn't happen. Perth win 80-79. Fifth game of the round, Southeast Melbourne hosted the Cairns Taipans, winning at 102-103. Scoreline's very flattering. Robertson hit a huge three at the buzzer to bring this one back, but they were basically down about 7 points with 30 seconds left, and free throws and a few shots just kind of made this one look closer than it was. I only watched the fourth quarter. Didn't have time to watch this one, unfortunately, because it seemed like an interesting game. Southeast Melbourne outscored Cairns 30-17 in the final quarter. The start of the quarter was 72-86. Again, a really interesting scoreline, how it got that high and that close towards the end. Creek, he's back, 32 points, 10 rebounds, 12 points in the fourth quarter, had a nice steal. Really impactful points and minutes in the fourth from Mitch Creek. You know, looked like he, again, going back to the start of the year, looked like he had that energy in the fourth that he had been lacking the last couple of weeks. So I don't know what he's had, but he's gotten over it. Could have been coronavirus. We don't know. He's back. Wesley made some really nice plays in the fourth, despite not getting a lot of time. Had 2 assists to Mitch Creek. Both times he caught it in the post and made a nice little pass to a cutting Creek. Bodied Majuk for an easy 2. Had a really good recognition when there was a mismatch. Cam Oliver was switched onto John Robertson in the post. Went down to it, showed high, knew Oliver was going to look for the three-point arc and made a steal that then later turned into a turnover for Mitch Creek. But looked good out there and then got taken out because Mitchell preferred a different closing lineup. Really pissy foul call on Dane Pinot on Cam Oliver as he went up for a putback. I kind of saw the foul. I saw the rationale, but not enough contact for me. Really good defense from Mirko Jerick on Kyle Adnam rushing over on him on the perimeter, forcing a travel late in the game. That if he hits that shot, we got a totally different result. And fair play to Majuk Deng, hit the big 3 at the 24-second mark to push the score to 94-101. The game was over at that point. It got closer thereafter, but nah. Cairns, listen to this, shot 64% from two-point range, 50% from three-point range. This Southeast Melbourne team, I'm all for, you know, high pace, but you just can't give up these types of percentages. And there were scores that were just like, you know, guys just not even on the split line. I'm all for being, you know, more offensive oriented, but you've got to play like lower to middle range defense, and they just don't do it, which is interesting. Interesting. Wesley came out, didn't have foul trouble, came out. The crunch time lineup for the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix was John Robertson, Kyle Adnam, Ben Magin, Mitch Creek, Dane Pinot, despite I thought this was a chance where like, oh, let's maybe, Walker got a bit of time in there as well, but that was the lineup that ended it. It was a chance where we thought, oh, I thought Wesley was playing well and probably warranted those minutes, and you know, whether it's him at the small ball five and you with go without Pinot, they've got decisions to make going forward into next season, what they're going to do about Dane Pinot, who came on so strongly. They need some rim protection. They just don't have it. They don't play defense. And, you know, Adnam, as your closing lineup, played a good game in this one, but you know, going forward, is he the guy who's going to play closing basketball, winning minutes? I think there's no shame in saying with him he's a quarters one through three and maybe a bit of the fourth, and you know, he's a guy, impact guy off the bench, not so much a closer, but I could be wrong on that. Yeah, as I said, what's the future of Wesley on this team? He signed a three-year deal. He's obviously at the end of this season, 1 year into it, 2 years left. They whiffed on Benson. Obviously, you could see they wanted a big who was mobile. He just wasn't the fit. And then, funnily enough, they've gone away from Kendall Stevens, who had a nice game against Illawarra, only played the 2 minutes in this game. So Mitchell's got his favourites, and he goes with them. Hasn't always worked out, especially late in the year. They're fading. They're a team that is fading fast. What's their way forward? I don't know. Sixth game of the round. Sydney hosted the Melbourne United. Wow. I picked Melbourne going into this game. And I think I even put it up on Twitter. I think there's a thing where Milhouse in The Simpsons show has a diorama and he shows how gravity works, and it's literally a plank with a slinky on it, and he hits it once and it goes once and then comes to a rest. And Mrs. Krabappel's like, pretty lame, Milhouse. This was lame. This is a lame effort for Melbourne United, and I thought this was their chance to make the top four, and I don't see them doing it the rest of the way. Brisbane are in form. Cairns are better than them, as a Perth and Sydney. So this was their chance to do something of substance this season. Like, it's one thing if they scrape through the floor into the four, beating Southeast Melbourne and Illawarra and maybe Brisbane and New Zealand early. This was their chance to say, no, we're actually a decent team capable of something, and they didn't. Casper Ware was on fire in the first quarter, just knocking threes from absolutely everywhere. This was talked about a lot. Subbed out at the 5 minute and 55 second mark of the first quarter, having made a bunch of threes. Both Gaze and Heal were perplexed by the change, and then returned at the 3:57 mark. So whether Will Weaver has his rotations worked out pre-game or whatnot, very, very strange substitution pattern, no matter what way you slice it. Long came out at the 5 minute and 16 minute mark of the first quarter and would not return until the 4 minute and 52 second mark of the second, nearly a quarter long sit down. He did have two fouls, but that's a long time. JLA in this game, 23 minutes, 11 points, 50%, 5 rebounds, 1 turnover. Looks like a nice stat line. Just looked clumsy and underdone. He's not. That's a lot of minutes, half a game. I'm just not huge on his game. He's a bit pinball out there. He makes plays that just look really amateur. Not a 23-minute player in the NBL at this stage of his career. At this stage of his career for me. The Pledger injury has forced him into that role, and he's just not ready. A couple of times he had shots that were just never going to go in, and it just slows your momentum. So I would have played Long close to 40 minutes in this game, even with foul trouble. Question I have on my pad here. Can Didi dribble right-handed? Always goes left. Got injured again, went down with a calf or a knee, whatever it is. Take your pick with Luzardo, who seems to get injured often. Question I had for everyone out there is, can Xavier Cooks shoot the basketball? 7 points in this game, 3 of 6. So 50% from the field, looks good. 1 of 4 from the foul line. He's got a weird-looking action, very similar to LaMelo Ball. Can he shoot? Has anyone seen him overseas? Apparently, he's, you know, when Lamanis picked him over a bunch of players for the Boomers, had said how, you know, long, rangy wing player who can shoot from the outside. Maybe he had a good camp, because I haven't seen it in the 5 or so games he's played in the NBL. Fourth quarter, on a long rebound, Casper Ware just wanted the ball more than McCarron and Chris Golding. Wish I had the time code. Ball goes long. It's coming out to between McCarron and Golding. Neither one of them takes the initiative to get the ball. Casper Ware, being a tough nugget that he is, splits them both, grabs it, and goes the other way for, I think, either a foul or a layup. That was one of the worst-looking plays I've seen of NBL 20. Have we found out the answer to the question? Are we comfortable answering this question now? Are two NBL first-teamers, namely Trimble and Sean Long, are two All-NBL second-teamers worth as much as one All-NBL first-teamer? You know, basketball, only 5 guys can take the floor. Do you want 2 guys who are good or 1 guy who's great? I think I'm happy to say, on the whole, you want that first teamer. And the answer is definitely you want that one first teamer when that first teamer in question is Casper Ware. Hasn't shot well, shot great in this game, but his defense, his leadership, so on and so forth, just his feel for the game, he's one of the best in the league. Melbourne only had 6 assists as a team. Whew, 6. You can always count it on one hand. Sydney had 24. That's almost 4 times as much. I'm holding up 4 fingers. I'll pat him against the microphone. Trimble was better. 26 points on 47% shooting, most of which came from inside the paint, had 6 of 8 from the foul line. You know, was making things happen. Melo Trimble's not the huge problem with this team. I think he's been good. People have been talking about, oh, I'd not bring him back, bring in another import. I think Melo Trimble's really good. And I think the criticism has been really unfair. And it's centered around that idea that he's a score-first point guard or scoring guard or small, and people don't like that. It goes against the grain of that black and white newsreel basketball, bring it down, high 1-4, the Washington Generals type shit. A lot of people have said a lot of things about Melbourne United. I'm off this camp now. This was their chance to show me, even if they hadn't won this game, but put up a decent performance, I would have been still respectful of them. I'm just, the plug is pulled, I'm out, I've turned my back, no turning back. People say, oh, wow, it was about time. Well, you know, I like to give people a chance. They took a chance. I tipped them. They made me look silly, and I'm not happy. Sean Long. No, let's talk before that. When you say Melbourne United, people have often said, oh, the problem with this team is the imports. It's the imports, which is the classic NBL problem. There's a problem, it's the imports. Blame the new guy. Blame the outsider. Is it, though? When I say Melbourne to United to you, your first thought should be Chris Golding. He is their best player. He was their best player last year. He didn't play to it, but he was. Oh, Castle Weir was, actually. I'll scrap that. But this season, he is their best player. He's an Olympian. He's on the Boomers. I'm of the old-fashioned feeling that, and thinking that with a team, your best player is the guy who, when you have a problem, you knock on their door first. Well, Chris Golding, this is your team. Let's knock on his door. And then, to a lesser extent, it's David Barlow. You know, Trimble and Long have been there for 6 months. These guys have been there for years. I forget how long, but each of them have done a couple of seasons here with this team. So it was their team. It's their responsibility to say to Trimble and Long, here's how you're going to play Melbourne United basketball, because we are Melbourne United. Long and Trimble should not be dictating to this team how it's run. Yet they kind of are, and it's 1 foot in, 1 foot out, and it's not working. I don't know if it's too smart or too dumb, but it ain't working. Barlow, Golding, and McCarron, combined for 21 points, 7 of 20, 35%, 9 rebounds, 1 assist. Chris Golding, the only one to get to the foul line, and went 4 of 5 and in a combined 70 minutes of 20 of 200. So in 35% of the time, they scored, they should have scored 31 points. 35% of the 88. They only scored 21. They're not working. And you know, we say with Mitch McCarron, like, oh, we've got to find him and everything. Mitch McCarron is a great attack at the basket. He's got a great handle. I had Cam Dugar on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and we spoke about Todd Blanchfield and his need to step up and not only just get a couple of screens and make a catch and shoot, but actually put his presence on the game. Mitch McCarron, do the same. Get the ball out of the basket, push it in transition. You're just as capable as Trimble of handling this ball. I feel like those three have, I feel like they're struggling. I feel like they've given up, and whatever the reason is, you don't do that. You know, you're Melbourne United, not Melo Trimble, not Sean Long. You are. Let's not blame the imports. Let's actually watch what's on the court. Watch the game and see who's the most unanimated and disinterested. Sean Long did have a bad game, having said all that. Perhaps stemmed from the rumours about him of late emerging from the locker room and coming late from the locker room and not warming up with the team. There was no press conference available. I haven't seen one with Dean Vickerman, so no one's asking the question, was it because he had diarrhea in the locker room? Was it because he had to tie up his shoes? Could be harmless, could be harmful. I don't know. When I get that press conference, I'll let you know. Long had 13 points, 4 of which came in garbage time. 6 rebounds, and was content to shoot from the outside. You know, didn't want any part of Bogut. Set fruity picks and played bad defense inside. So as much as I went off on those three before, Sean Long did not have a good game. And it's been a couple in a row now for him, or a couple in the last month. United, quote-unquote, let the Kings shoot 15 from 35 from the outside. That's 42%. So the Kings average 11 makes on 34%. That, again, they made 15 on 42. So 4-plus makes and almost 10%-plus better average. And they scored 52 points in the paint compared to Melbourne, who only scored 44. You have Sean Long in your team. You have Melo Trimble. You have Golden. Guys, you can get the rack and you still get outscored by the Kings. And Tate just looked like he was going everywhere. I was expecting to see a change to this game. I think PK on the basketball show was calling for this as well. Like, there just needs to be a change to the strategy. It's not working, Melbourne United. Try something different. I was hoping to see Barlow out of the starting lineup and Stanton Kidd in. That didn't happen. This team needs a change. Now, whether it's a change to the starting lineup or the rotations, I'm not too sure. But take the emphasis away from defense, play up pace. To concede 106 to the Kings, the worst offense in the league, something's wrong with the defense, and I don't think you can fix it. So you may as well try and put up 120, which they're capable of doing. But it's just, it wasn't attractive. It was basketball lullaby out there. If your kids are having trouble sleeping, pop this game on, and I will fall asleep like a log, I'm sure. That's the game of the rounds. That's it. Let's go on to talking points. Let's talk about what's the biggest talking point in the thing. I think it's Lamar Patterson's MVP candidacy case. So I went and had a look and saw where he's at and what the case is. I think he's the second best player in the NBL, but let's have a look. He is sixth in the MVP odds, courtesy of sportsbet.com.au at $16. Cotton is the favorite at $2.25. He's second in points per game at 21 points per game. He's 46% from the field, 19th in rebounding per game with 6, 4th in assists with 5, and the Brisbane Bullets have a record of 13 wins, 11 losses. That's 4th place in the NBL. I've ruled out Machado as a candidate for the MVP. Maybe I shouldn't, but I have. I feel that's out of Patterson and Cotton. As much as Machado's been good, I just feel like it's... I feel like Newble and Oliver have been such a huge part of their success as well. Whereas Patterson, I feel like you can directly point to Cotton in Perth. You can directly point to Patterson in Brisbane. So to all those Cairns fans and Machado fans, I see your point. But at the same time, I think it's these two. Anyway, going on. He's had a great year, as is Cotton. But here's the snag in his season. The 3rd of November to the 14th of December. And listen, if this is the snag in your season, you're a pretty good player. In that stretch, 3rd of November to 14th of December, so, you know, a long time. What is that? Almost a month and a half. LP goes for 20 points per game on 38.6% shooting, and Brisbane go 3 of 6. 3 wins, 6 losses in that span. So 20 points per game, 39%. So he loses a point per game, but loses almost 8%, 10%. So GST... off his shooting percentages almost, yeah. And they go 3 of 6 and had some, and in that game, in that stretch, had a sort of 36-point game, so had a couple of games in the low teens. Cotton does not have a stretch like this. He just doesn't. He goes up and down, but his scoring is far more consistent. And I know MVP is not just about scoring, but it just showed the level of play with Cotton is game to game, minute to minute, second to second. And with LP, it wasn't. And don't forget, on the 9th of December, LP is benched in New Zealand. Now, it could have been because he was late or had a shoe problem. It was broke. I can't remember, but I believe it was literally they were looking for something different and he'd come off a bad game and they were looking to sort of get him up for it. I believe. It was a long time ago now. Cotton doesn't need that. You know, an MVP shouldn't need to go to the bench to realize, oh, okay, I've got to do something different. You know, Cotton's been there all year. Let's look at Bryce Cotton. On the other hand, he's first in points per game, 22.2, just 1 point more, 43.3% from the field, so less, 12th in assists per game with one less, and Perth's record is 16-8 and have been, you know, around the top three or top two the entire season. Advanced stats, they're within 0.1 of each other in PER. I think Patterson is 19.6 and Cotton's 19.5, whatever, read into that, whatever you want. Usage rate, LP at 32, BC at 28. So LP gets more of the ball and does a similar thing with it. I guess, you know, we talk about, well, I talked about that dip in Patterson's play, if you want to call it that. You know, the big knock on Patterson was his fitness coming into the year. Let's talk about that. And I have a series of questions that really get to the bottom of this conversation. So anyone who's having this conversation with themselves but not answering these questions is talking to the mirror for their own amusement. Was LP in shape coming into NBL 20? It's a yes or no question. I say no. So if he's not in shape, did that lack of shape affect his performance? I would say yes, but let's say you answer no. If not, tell me other athletes who have performed better in worse shape coming into a athletic sport like basketball. The boxer Butterbean is one, and maybe Shaquille O'Neal in those years with the Lakers, but again, that's probably debatable as well. And then to people who I say who are, you know, so if the answer is he wasn't in as good a shape, did it affect his performance? And you would say yes, like his finishing around the hoop has improved so much more over the last 5 weeks or five games as he's come into shape than it was earlier in the year. And then to my question to people who are saying, oh, he's not out of shape or it doesn't matter, I will ask you this. Did you see him in NBL 19 compared to NBL 20 in person? Have you seen him in both seasons? That's important, because if you saw him in NBL 19 like I did, his physical condition late that year compared to how he came into this year, you would say there is an immediate difference. Now, I haven't actually seen Lamar Patterson in person this year. Saw him last year, seen him on television plenty, but I've spoken to people who have and people who go to games last year and this year who are very credible and competent and have said that. His physical shape is not where it should have been. I don't think there's any sort of doubt about that. And he's now played himself into shape, and now he's an MVP candidate. Who would have thought he'd be an MVP candidate late in the year? He wasn't earlier in the year, and for good reason, I think, anyway. And the other thing, I read an interesting stat the other day. 50% of people commentating on the NBA or commenting on the NBA don't watch the games. 50%, half of them, who are talking on Twitter or write about the league. I have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of people commenting on the NBL are the same way. Watch the games. You might enjoy them. And if you're watching the games with your eyes open, you'll see that Bryce Cotton is the NBL MVP. Not by a long way, but the MVP nonetheless. However, we do have four games left, and they could be the decider. We shall see. Next talking point I want to quickly get on is, I think we have our top four. I don't know if anyone sees Melbourne jumping in ahead of these teams. I certainly don't. They're not getting ahead of Perth. They're not getting ahead of Sydney. Cairns, I'm pretty confident. And then Brisbane, I think, are in form, and they are on the upswing, and Melbourne are on the downswing. I think this is going to be our final four. So my question I have to everyone out there is, who would you rather face, Cairns or Brisbane? Depending on whatever team you are. Sydney and Perth, obviously, it's a different conversation who they want to play of the two. But I think just objectively, if you're just a generic vanilla team, I think you want to face Cairns rather than Brisbane, even though they're going to finish presumably higher or are higher at the minute. And I say I would rather take on Cairns in the finals than Brisbane for three reasons. One, Brisbane. Brisbane are hot. Five-game winning streak. They look great. They've found their rotation. They are settled. They're on an upswing coming into the finals, which I think carries over. There's been debates about whether it does or not. I think it does. Second reason is LP. They have the second best player in the NBL, and maybe the first by season's end. We shall see. And then the third thing is continuity and maturity. All Brisbane's major contributors are 28 years plus. Magne is the only exception. You know, Patterson's in his prime. Glidden's 30 years old. Kadi, they rely on, who's 29 or 28. Braun, Singler, all these guys, late 20s, early 30s, they all just know how to win, and I think a little bit more enthused about winning. Not that to say that the Taipans aren't either. But the Taipans, on the other hand, they're depending on Cam Oliver, 23 years old Cam Oliver. Younger than Trimble, younger than Emmett Nah, not a lot older than LaMelo Ball himself. Really good player, but they are depending on him to be a star for them. Will Magne is dependent upon to defend the rim and rebound. He's not a throw the ball to, make big scores. We need 20 from you in the clutch under finals defense. Cam Oliver will be asked to do that. He's a better player than Magne. Can he do it consistently over four games against the pressure, the defensive pressure of a Sydney Kings and Perth Wildcats? We shall see, but I wouldn't be betting on it. Will Magnay, on the other hand, all he's got to worry about is running around blocking shots, which is a lot easier to do at 21 years old than it is to be relied upon for 20 and 10 in the finals. Also, looking at Cairns, Jerick, 24 years old, very hot-headed player, been playing great, shot 1 of 5 in the last game, but you know they're depending on him. And then Kouatanoi, who's not only injured, which is its own problem, but is only 22 years old. He's their starting power forward. You know, toughy. And Cairns have shown a habit of collapsing late in games. We've seen it. Almost saw it in Southeast Melbourne in this round. Also, Mike Kelly, 2 years coaching experience, decent length of time. If they go up against Perth, which is their most likely first-round opponent, Trevor Gleeson, 14 years experience. You know? Civilizations have risen and fallen in 14 years, not so much in two. That's another talking point for you. Lastly, tips. I'll go through this real quick because I'm going to put out the John Casey episode on Wednesday night, Thursday, I think, as a whole, rather than do a separate tip show. First game of the round, Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. These are all Australian Eastern Standard Times. Melbourne hosts Perth. I have Perth winning that game. I've given up all faith on Melbourne. They don't defend the paint or the outside. My storylines from this game, can Perth push on and increase their percentage against this team like Sydney did? And then also the thing I'm looking for is Long versus Plumlee. I just think Plumlee's too damn big. Sure, Long's big and strong and athletic, but he's nowhere near Plumlee. It'll be really interesting to see that head-to-head matchup. Next game, Friday, 5:30 p.m. The New Zealand Breakers host the Adelaide 36ers. I have New Zealand in this game. New Zealand are hot. They lost by a point. They look great. Can they absorb that loss and play again and play well? I think so. If the 36ers couldn't beat Brisbane at home, they're not beating New Zealand on the road. Both Brisbane, against Brisbane, both Randall and Griffin had 21 points. Griffin's were more impactful and noticeable. Can Randall do the same in this game? What have I just said? Against Brisbane, both Randall and Griffin had 21 points. In the round. So, you know, like, yes, this is what I want to make a point of. Okay, I'm back. Griffin and Randall had 21 points against Brisbane in this last round. Griffin, you knew about those 21 points. Like, they just jumped off the page. You did them in spurts. They were big scores. They were impactful, felt good. Randall had the same amount of points. They just sort of came and went. And here's an interesting thing. Jerome Randall is fourth in points per game. He scores but one basket less than Bryce Cotton. Randall's had a couple of good games. Hit a big shot late against New Zealand to win it, I think, or against someone. 2 points less than Cotton. Like, I know it's just scoring, and scoring's not everything, but when Bryce Cotton scores, like, it's in bunches. It blows out teams. It blows out the game. Randall doesn't do that. Like, the points are kind of a miss. Fourth. He's the fourth highest scorer in the NBL. He's not the fourth best player in the NBL. You know, can he make his points more impactful or feel more impactful? I know feelings, you know, the game doesn't give a damn about your feelings, but there is a, you know, there is a vibe to the game. Anyway, third game of the round, Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Cairns hosts Illawarra. Cairns are going to win that game. We all know why. Fourth game of the round, Saturday, 5:30 p.m. Brisbane hosts the Melbourne United. Brisbane at home. Better team. Who's going to guard Lamar Patterson? McCarron and Ilya too small. Stanton Kidd, perhaps. You think David Barlow can stay in front of Patterson? Yeah, I'm not so sure. Fifth game of the round, Saturday, 8 p.m. Perth hosts the Sydney Kings. Oh, my word, what a game. Perth will win, I think. Perth are just as good as Sydney, but they're also at home. I know they've travelled to Melbourne earlier in the week, but I actually don't think that's a huge concern for them. I want to talk about Damian Martin quickly. Damian Martin got injured on the 28th of December with a heel injury, was slated to miss four games. His return is slated as the 9th of February against Brisbane, presumably still on the cards. I haven't heard about any delays with him. They miss him. They need him. It will be interesting to see what the Wildcats do about their backup point guard situation. Will it be Britt and the DPs again, or a shift of Norton, Cotton, White, and Steindl push their minutes around to see Cotton more at the one and not bother giving the 10 minutes elsewhere? we've got finally got Plumlee versus Bogut. I think the athleticism of Plumlee is going to be a nightmare for Andrew Bogut, and I wish him every best luck. Cotton versus Casper Ware. I've just got wow. I sound like Owen Wilson here, but unbelievable. I said here as well at the start, but a lot of travel for Perth this round. Perth to Melbourne, back to Perth, but well spaced out. I think it's easier because Perth play that first game in Melbourne on Wednesday, and then they're playing this one on Saturday, so they get plenty of time, whereas Sydney are probably going to come over only a day or two before, and I feel like that's harder for them, especially when we talk about the recently load-managed Andrew Bogut. Sixth game of the round, Illawarra host New Zealand Breakers. Breakers are going to win that, and you all know why. That's Sunday at 3 o'clock. Seventh game of the round, Sunday at 5 o'clock p.m. The Adelaide 36ers host the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix and the returning Mitch Creek. Why am I whispering? I don't know. My tongue hurts. Southeast Melbourne is who I have tipped. I just think they split the season series. So the games against these two, December 13th, Southeast Melbourne lost that one by 2 points, 113 to 111 at Adelaide. November 18th, Southeast Melbourne again lost, 91 to 103 in Melbourne. And then October 27th, Adelaide lost that game, 101-91. In Adelaide's wins this season, I want to kind of talk about Adelaide again. Like, who's their top player? Who is this team? What's their rotation? Griffin plays 25 minutes and plays well. Then he plays 10 and doesn't play well. He plays defense. He doesn't. Randall is impactful. Then he's not. Daniel Johnson has a career high in points in a loss and blah, blah, blah. What the hell is this team? So Adelaide, in 11 wins, their top scorers have been Randall 5 times, Johnson twice, Griffin 3 times, and Anthony Drimmick once. In their 13 losses, Randall has top scored 7 times, Johnson 4 times, Griffin once, and Drimmick once. I honestly believe the answer to this team is Griffin and Drimmick, in particular Drimmick. Getting them going at the basket, they're two guys who score at the hoop. It is important to be able to, for this team to get to the foul line. I think they have a crazy stat when they shoot over a certain amount of free throws, they win. They need to be aggressive at the basket, and that starts with Griffin and Drimmick. Randall and Johnson just don't seem to get there as much. They're not those contact players. They're not as young as these two guys. I'm not entirely sure the point I'm making, bringing up their top scorers and wins and losses. I guess I just want to see Drimmick more involved offensively and get consistency out of Griffin. Can you make him get down in a stance and play some textbook defense and not block a guy but just keep them in front of him? Is he capable? Can he do that? And then also, Mitch Creek is back. He looked fantastic against Cairns, as I said before. Why wouldn't he replicate that? Can he go back in there and make a mockery of the team that let him go in such... let's say venomous circumstances on both sides, I think a little bit. Can he have that big game in Adelaide that he so desperately wants? He must have this circled. They've got a huge wait all through the week. They're not on a back-to-back. They're not traveling, but. They're making a short trip from Melbourne to Adelaide. Good luck to Mitch Creek and the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. And good luck to every team playing this round. Really exciting round. We're, 4 rounds from the end of the year, 4 games or whatever from the end of the season for most teams. Very exciting stuff. Guys, unlike that 50% of NBA people commentating, watch the games. You'll have a fantastic time. And get out, buy a ticket. And I think when I first started this podcast, I wanted to manufacture a catchphrase, and I don't know if this is the way to do it, but, you know, go out there, go to the games, buy a ticket, take your father, take your friend, take a work colleague, whatever, take your mother, because if you don't, I will. Has that got legs? I doubt it. Guys, thanks very much for this one, and see you next week. And this Thursday, John Casey, listen to that interview. Ciao.